I come from a secular family. California, Easter eggs on Sunday in the yard. In the yard. We came to Minnesota and we thought, what? Snow? Where? Snow on Easter? What do you do with it? How do we hide eggs for our kids? But I've been here a long time now, and unfortunately, I don't have any kids. I mean, I have kids, but any kids or grandkids around. So, and today would be a beautiful day for doing eggs, don't you guys think? Wow. So this morning, I want to talk about sponsoring our shadow. So in Buddhism, we have this term, consciousness, vijnana. And everything is vijnana. Everything is consciousness. And consciousness creates reality. And either what's being created feels like it's part of a larger family, which includes everyone and everything, or not. And because of our developmental needs, we learn to create filters so that we filtered out vijnana, an awareness of what Suzuki Roshi calls big mind, what I call heart mind. And we do this through memories and beliefs, and we suffer. So Zen practice is about this opportunity we have to open and close each filter, because sometimes we need those filters. So we're no longer constipated, thought constipation, feeling constipation. We're no longer numbed. We're no longer doing analysis paralysis, right? And these are the first steps on the Eightfold Path, but also the last steps. We understand about big heart mind that we're all connected. That's the first step. And the second is we have an intention to live that way, to practice that way, through our meditation and our ethical behavior. And those are also the last steps on the path, because they're considered the faith steps and the wisdom steps. So by doing the practice, the faith gets transmuted into wisdom. So our conscious mind is only a little part of a whole big being, big beingness, and it's deeper than our chattering in the chatterbox cafe. And our practice is partly to shine a light below the surface of this chattering mind, of this compartmentalization. So we're no longer closed to different parts, but resume to our original wholeness, to what Dogen calls whole being Buddha nature. Through persistently and patiently shining a light in the darkness of the cave underneath what we're doing in our conscious mind, without evaluation, without criticism, without an attempt to figure out, we have that opportunity. So we have different sub-personalities. We identify with certain ways of being. And that's healthy and important, but often the situation changes, and our identity has to change, or we get more closed down. And I talked last time about my identity is changing, because now I'm a follower rather than a leader. And that's a wonderful opportunity for me. I mean, when I was a child and an adolescent, To be a leader was strong. Oh, yeah. And to be a follower was weak. Well, that's a silly idea. That's a really silly idea. But I learned it from my community, from my culture, from my family. Right? So here I have a chance to open up beyond my filter and just grow. Just grow. So often we have a good self, bad self dichotomy. And last time I talked about the person I used to support at Zen Center, the woman who left several years ago, I would say more than a decade ago, who was a secret smoker. Especially at Zen Center, she was a secret smoker because at Zen, in the Zen community, people don't smoke. And if you smoke, you don't want other people to know that you smoke. That's bad self. So she hid it. She didn't even tell me for some time. I'd been mentoring her for some time. But then how could I help her bring both sides of her dilemma? D, remember from last time, two lemma points? How could both sides of those two points who were in tension, the light and the dark, into full awareness, so she could move beyond being stuck on one. And she learned how to be aware of her shadow. And then fully, after a while, embraced the bad side. Now I'm not talking about indulgence. I'm not talking about indulgence. But she opened up to the bad side, which was that she got great pleasure from smoking, that it was a break for her, that it calmed her, that it was relaxing, that it delighted her in a way meditation didn't. And to admit that to her teacher, meditation sometimes sucks. And you want to tell your teacher about how your mind is doing skyrocketing and plunging? Well, probably not, right? Probably not. But by holding it, she was able, both the nasty and the delightful, including the underlying sensations, which don't take sides. In case you haven't noticed it, the underlying sensations don't take sides. She was able to move through. I actually don't remember if she actually quit smoking. So I can't tell you that. But I remember she was much happier. Maybe she quit. Maybe then she was able to discipline herself to quit. I don't know. So when we have a problem, when we have a disturbance in our filter, in our limited consciousness, it's evidence that something's waking up. Our disturbances can be very disturbing, but it's double-edged. They can be destructive. We can get depressed. We can act out. We do other problematic behaviors. But often and usually, there are hidden opportunities for major growth. Well, most of us, when we think about our lives, can remember or have friends who experienced death, divorce, illness, or addiction that led to significant positive change. So sponsorship. We have radical acceptance in Zen. Tara Brach has been a great radical acceptance person, but sponsorship is even beyond radical acceptance. The psychologist Stephen Gilligan uses the term sponsorship. Buddhist psychologist spons etymologically to pledge solemnly. So sponsorship is a vow to help a person, including ourselves, to use each event and experience to awaken to the goodness and the gifts within this little Buddha nature. which is often is so covered over, is often so concealed that we don't even think it's there. So in my first book, I talked about Helen Keller. I'm going to read a little excerpt about Helen Keller. I don't know if this is from my first book. I know I talked about her, though. At 18 months, Helen Keller contracted a severe illness that left her without sight or hearing for the rest of her life. For the next 6 years, she suffered in a dark and isolated world of intense sensations, anger, self-absorption, and frustration. Nobody could find a way to connect with her, and she couldn't find a way to directly communicate with others. When she was 7, her social worker, whom I will call her sponsor, Annie Sullivan, came into her life. As Keller wrote, "The most important day I remember in all my life is the one in which my teacher, Anne Mansfield Sullivan, came to me. I'm filled with wonder when I consider the immeasurable contrast between the two lives which it connects." So through her connection with this woman, Annie Sullivan, she was able to re-enter the world of the living, and she never looked back. She went on to distinguish herself as one of the most intelligent, inspirational, and humanitarian persons of this century. So here we see the distinction between her pre-sponsored self and her post-sponsored self. So as I was getting ready for this talk, and it occurred to me that since I came to Minnesota, there seems to be 12-step here and 12-step there and 12-step anywhere. We didn't have 12-step in California. Maybe we did. I mean, this is years ago. And we didn't have it in northern Minnesota. Everybody just drank in northern Minnesota. So I came from California to northern Minnesota. But then when I moved down here, 12-step, people in 12-step, the Zen Center here, that many years ago. And now so many people do 12-step. Well, what about sponsorship? What about a sponsor in a 12-step program? Wow, yes. So then I went online and I read just this last week about different features of sponsorship in 12-step. So I read this. A sponsor is a member of the sober community for several years before mentoring a sponsee. The specific responsibilities of a sponsor aren't clearly defined, partly because every relationship between a sponsor and sponsee is unique. Studies find that the sponsors are as important as meetings, if not more so. Meetings provide great value to people in 12-step programs, but sponsors offer a deeper connection that helps a sponsee outside of these meetings. So in Buddhism, in Zen, this is the first leg of the three-legged stool, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And in Zen, the teacher is Buddha. The mentor is Buddha. And, you know, this isn't Buddha, some big fancy Buddha, we've just been there. We've done that. We've got it in us. I had in my life two main sponsors, Suzuki and Katagiri, two minor sponsors, Elmer Running and Robert Aiken. And of course, I never thought of the word sponsor. And we have now a program that we developed maybe a half dozen years ago, I don't know how long, of working with mentees. We're mentors. Ted is a mentor. I'm a mentor. Ben, Bouchot, we're all mentoring people. In a way, we're sponsoring them, right? We're sponsoring them. And we're sponsoring right now 100 people out of the Sangha between us. Maybe 225 people in a Sangha. I don't know. That's the last I saw. 100 people. Wow. And others of you might want to do it. You have nothing to lose, right? It's one leg of the three-legged stool that supports your practice, that supports your meditation. And we have now two women sponsors who have come forth quite recently. And I don't want to say are eager to sponsor you, but I think they are. I think they're eager. And the first one is Deb Melke, who's been with us for a long time. And Deb is raising her hand. Deb was my first student when I lived in northern Minnesota. I don't know what she's still hanging around with me, but I like it. She took a hiatus. She took a hiatus. She took a long hiatus. And then Andrea Martin. Oh, hi, Andrea. Andrea, raise your hand. Andrea is the author. Well, she's the editor, but in a way, she's the author of Katagiri Roshi's most recent books. Wanda Isle is the editor of my books, but no, she's the co-author. The time that Andrea spent on this, the effort she spent, the plumbing of her depths on her book, she's the co-author of his last books. So they're both here. They're both here, and you can contact them just by contacting Zen Center if you'd like to. You know, just meet with them once, or just meet with me once, or Ted, or Bouchot. There's nothing to lose, right? So what are the features of sponsors in 12-step, and how are they applicable to Zen? Well, there are six features, which I read about online. I've been to about three 12-step meetings, but I taught at all of them. They're at Zen Center on Thursday night. I don't know if they're happening online. Huh. Somebody knows. I don't know if they are. Oh, they are. Ted says they are. So first feature, sponsors care about more than a sponsee's sobriety. Many sponsors regularly talk to sponsees about other aspects of life. They know that emotional and physical health are key parts of their sponsee's journey. Sponsors offer both practical and emotional guidance for those they sponsor. Sponsors are also typically good at setting some boundaries so that their sponsee doesn't become overly dependent on them. That's what we do. That's what we do as teachers, as spiritual friends to you guys. We know that your physical and emotional health is really important to your practice. So we support you as we best we can. And sometimes we offer practical and emotional guidance. And we help you set boundaries that are not too rigid, but that are permeable. That's what we do. Second thing in 12 steps, sponsors provide an example to follow. Knowing that someone has been through similar challenges and staying the path is invaluable. In addition to confiding with sponsors and seeking guidance from them, sponsees need only look at their sponsors' actions for inspiration. So hopefully we're inspiring. Hopefully we are. Sometimes maybe not, but some. Number four, sponsors encourage others to stay on the path. Attending meetings and following the steps is an essential part of recovery. Sponsors help those they mentor by encouraging them to stay the path. If a sponsee is on the fence about attending the next meeting, a brief reminder by the sponsor can make all the difference. So sometimes I need to remind my mentees, well, you know, you could get a little more support from the Sangha. Just because you're online doesn't mean you can't come on Sunday. Doesn't mean you can't stick around for the chat room. Doesn't mean you can't come on the monthly Friday night get together. So give them a little counseling, because that third leg of the stool is really important, Sangha. The fifth one, people in the program can trust their sponsors. A sponsee will likely only feel so comfortable sharing the most personal of struggles with loved ones, but they know they can trust their sponsor to understand their personal challenges. People in 12-step programs often develop a level of trust with their sponsors that creates a bond unlike any other in their lives. I'm still being sponsored. You know when my teacher died? More than 50 years ago? He's always sponsoring me. All I have to do is pay attention. He's always sponsoring me. Doesn't matter a life or death. He's sponsoring me. The last one, sponsors in 12 steps are also on their own path. Sponsors aren't perfect. Their concern is keeping a sponsee on the path. Sponsors make mistakes and they often fall short of their own standards. However, the best sponsors stay true to their mission, provide an example for others to follow, and never take advantage of those they mentor. So now I want to move back to self-sponsorship, which is what we do in Zen. You have a sponsor to help you self-sponsor, to help you practice the self-power of Zen, the deep self-power, the big mind power. With luck, we learned to do a little bit of self-sponsorship while we were growing up. A little bit. My grandson, Logan, couldn't sit still at all when he was in preschool, first in preschool. But he had no language or sponsorship skills for his feeling states, such as being tired, being hungry, being lonely, being angry. But over time, he learned to recognize and sponsor his own feeling states. I'm sure his mama helped him. Maybe his grandpa helped him a little bit, but not much. I don't get to see him. And so he became somewhat responsible. Sponse. Remember what sponse? Sponse. He became somewhat responsible. He pledged solemnly. So Erin, my daughter, said last Friday, Logan came home from school and he said, and Logan has dysgraphia, can't learn to read, and ADHD. But he's pledged solemnly to try to do it. So he came home from school on Friday and usually wants to get out of school early, but here's his responsible self. Mama, I stayed after the teacher let me stay because I wanted to finish my report. And Lauren said, oh, you're so responsible. I love you. So we develop some responsibility as we're growing up, but we still cut off parts of ourselves. And as we mature more, we seem to close off what's not socially acceptable more and more and more. We neglect it, we ignore it, we put it down. But those hidden parts still come up. They figure out how to assert themselves. We all have those parts. That smoker I talked about yearned for support of a non-judgmental presence to sponsor her. But she admitted to so few people that she had that she couldn't get the support, but I had modeled this for her so she could sponsor her hidden part, so she could be aware of the sense of deep release that her smoking gave her when she let go and just smoked. If each time our hidden parts are rejected, increasingly they're troublesome, they're disruptive. Any out of control or experience or behavior disturbs us. My student tried so hard to hide her smoking when she was at Zen Center, and continuing to do this caused her a whole bunch of stress, so that she finally leveled with me after more than a year of coming to Zen Center. So we have a tendency as human beings to use whatever means necessary to defeat or destroy that bad part that's poking up, that's unrecognized, the negative otherness. And we end up, if we do this too much, we live a superficial life. On screen number one, I want you to raise your hand if you saw the 1998 movie Pleasantville. Pleasantville. Anybody see it? One, two, three, four, five, six. Pleasantville. So now I'm gonna give you the summary for Pleasantville. I'm gonna read you a little summary. Siblings find themselves transported into a 1950s black and white TV sitcom landscape based on the old show Father Knows Best. While on the surface, everything seems perfect, there's no depth, there's no mystery, there's no color or soul in this world. It's all in black and white. Everyone lives in an enclosed, pleasant trance, devoid of real liveliness, a sort of mindless, brave new world. The two visitors instigate a series of happenings that precipitate awakenings in each person, including themselves. Each awakening occurs when a person connects with a hidden or undeveloped part of his or her being. For a teenage athlete, it happens via love and romance. For the kid's mother, it comes from discovering the sensuality of her own body. For the father, it comes from recognizing his longings. For the girl, it comes from reading classics. For the boy, it comes from finding his fierceness. In each case, the experience and expression of undeveloped parts of their selves transforms the person into living color. It's a really good movie. Then others around them have then to deal with a myriad of responses that arise in response to this awakening. So by sponsoring ourselves, you guys, we are able to let go of the fake smiles, the impulse to hurt someone or to hurt ourselves, the fears, the numbness, the addictions that keep us closed off. Our negative parts are dammed up. And inevitably the river leaks. It leaks through. It brings with it a flood of memories, dreams, reflections. It's just inevitable. How could it be differently? And it's scary. Yikes, I don't want that stuff to leak in. If people knew that I such and such, such and such, I better hide. Or not come to Zen Center at all. Or not, you know, whatever at all. To compensate, we develop new defenses, more dissociation, more compulsive behaviors, more intellectualization, more meanness to ourselves or others. But it's possible to regain control and get rid of this negative otherness by sponsoring it gently, tenderly, lovingly. This is Zen, after all. This is Zen. That's what we do. We sponsor that negative otherness gently, tenderly, lovingly. And as we do that, we sense connection between these parts. We begin to feel the unitary field of self, big mind that holds all of them together. The many identities might be contradictory. How can you be a follower and a leader both? How can you be strong and weak both? Well, sure. They all have a place. Dogen over and over again says, whole being Buddha nature, whole being Buddha nature, whole being Buddha nature, not half being Buddha nature, not quarter being Buddha nature, whole being Buddha nature. So there are many aspects of being a person, but often we think these parts aren't ready for prime time and will never be ready for prime time. Well, don't be in a rush. Just work with your cushion or your chair if you're a meditation. Be your own mentor or get a mentor to help you. And little by little, the fierceness, if you're feeling fierce, that revealed itself as temper tantrums. A family member of mine, well, I won't get into that. Anyway, temper tantrums. If those temper tantrums that you had as a child and they still come out as adult in some way, can they be sponsored? Can they turn into a fierceness and fight and righting wrongs or sticking up for ourselves or sticking up for others? Yes, they have to be sponsored. They're waiting for us to sponsor them. Without sponsoring, the same tantrum. So now they come out in an adult way. The same rage leaking out, the same passive aggressiveness, the same violence, if not to others, to ourselves. Artists know how to sponsor. Artists know how to take creative energies from someplace deeper than their cognitive self. They know how to receive those energies and cultivate a relationship with them. Not just controlling, but sponsoring to midwife them into the creative form. But we're Zen practitioners. We're all practicing to be performance artists, life artists. So we can sponsor those creative but chaotic life energies that are clamoring for attention. In case you didn't notice, they're clamoring for attention. We can develop skills to pay attention to the parts that are under the surface. If not, they're going to get us. In some way or another, they'll get us. So I'm going to be teaching a course on Zen and creativity, 6-week course on Wednesday starting May 26. It's going to be experiential class, and we're going to practice sponsoring our shadows and using the Tetralemma that I talked about last talk, so we can return to our original wholeness. Our original wholeness, whole being Buddha nature. Just as we are, before we even think of Buddha or nature or whatever is here supporting us. The more we try to get rid of a repetitive experience or behavior beyond our control, often the more deeper it becomes entrenched. It hasn't been sponsored yet. Sponsored. Can we develop curiosity about an unsponsored energy? A bunch of unsponsored energy, disturbing experiences, behaviors that almost overwhelm us. Can we welcome them? Can we welcome them? Our efforts to resist or overcome these problems are pretty futile. And they typically sustain the problems, in case you haven't noticed. As Stephen Gilligan says, the attempted solution becomes the problem. Ever notice that? Ever notice that? If you haven't noticed that, you're pretty out of it. But it's okay if you're out of it. Just sponsor that part of you that's out of it. I'm out of it lots of the time. My wife is always saying, Tim, oh. Obsessive positive thinking makes us more agitated, more self-absorbed, less effective. But this is Zen, you guys. Maybe the problem itself is a solution. What seems to be a terrible experience may need just some effective sponsorship, just some internal TLC, and that we have a chance to grow and develop. So I'll finish by talking a little bit about another person that I worked with not too long, although I knew him a long time. He came to Zen Center a long time, Jack, who had nagging doubts about, after a couple of years of practice, whether he could ever go deeper than the chatter, chatter, chatter. Couple years of practice, and he doubted whether he could ever do it in a way that would impact his life. So I helped him welcome his doubts, welcome his chatter in his meditation and with me, with curiosity. Finally, he began to notice a tender presence in here within the heart that had been ignored, that he could just hold and nurture, that was more calm, that was more centered, that was more alive. None of us needs to live in Pleasantville. We're all whole being Buddha nature. So I'm going to finish with a poem by Nikita Gill. You are not small. You are not unworthy. You are not insignificant. The universe wove you from a constellation. Every atom, every fiber in you comes from a different star. Together, you are bound by stardust. All together, spectacularly created by the energy of the universe itself. And that, my darling, is the poetry of physics, the poetry of you. So that's what I'd like to say this morning, and I'd be happy to entertain questions or comments from anyone.